It's my honor and my pleasure this evening to introduce a man who I have heard and is by reputation in AA one of the prince, or the prince, if you will, of sponsorship. And I believe him to be that from what I have heard. He is a man who certainly has my respect. He is a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and who really says only one thing, that he doesn't get enough respect in AA.
Well, Henry, hey, no. All right. He's also a guy in AA who likes to have fun. He likes to have a lot of fun. And I want you to welcome Clancy as I welcome him. Clancy, come on.
My name is Clancy Emmisland, and I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if you know the name of the song they played. That's called the Colonel Bogey March. I'd hope for a Hail to the Chief. Oh, 18 years is a long time in Bellevue, but with me, it's shit. My job in AA is to travel from town to town, simmering down the local dukes. Or as they say, a good goal in AA is to... Are you people talking in the back? This meeting isn't interrupting your conversation back there, is it? I don't want any movement when I'm talking. You go ahead and get your coffee, sir. We'll get ours later. I'm very sorry I missed the afternoon seminar. I really wanted to be there. Some guy had asked me to go down, and he was having some problems in Houston, and he wanted me to go down. Last night I addressed a distinguished group of doctors and psychiatrists in Houston in a big hotel, and I left a call this morning at my hotel for 5:45. I had to catch a plane at 7 to Dallas and catch another plane here, and they forgot to call me. And I woke up this morning, it was about 6:50, and I was an hour from the airport, and I didn't know what to do. I really was at a loss. You people would have collapsed under it. But I called up the airlines, and they said, well, it's a special thing you're on, and we cannot give you alternate seating on another plane, but we can put you on standby all day long. And so I went out to the airport, and they got me out at 9:20 to Dallas, got in there about 10:20. And then they said, well, we can get you out of here at 4 o'clock this afternoon. So I called Dick, I guess before I left Houston, and said, I'm not going to be able to get there until dinner time. Maybe it'd be better if I didn't come. So I didn't know, I wasn't sure that this dinner was going on. There was a seminar this afternoon, and this was going on tonight. But he was kind enough to invite me to continue. So I went to Dallas, and I called up some friends, and Dallas, they come up to the airport, picked me up, and went to a little noon discussion meeting at the Town North Club, and had a nice barbecue dinner, went over to their house, took a little snooze for a half an hour and a shower, and felt great, got on the plane. I'm really glad to be here. This is really a pocket of insanity in a... Every time I come here, I just feel like I should be directing a Christmas pageant. And I'm glad to see a lot of you young pukes are still around. Really, it's nice to see people applaud for themselves a lot. I have a special thing I brought you from Showbiz USA. I'm going to give you an impression, probably never before done at an AA podium, just to you young people. It's my imitation of an Italian leper.
Fazula.
All right. Now, listen. Now that I've told you about sponsorship, I'm glad to be here because I think this is a subject which I feel strongly about and is one that there's a wide variety of belief dealing with sponsorship. I know that you had a seminar afternoon, and I probably will repeat many of the things that you've already talked about because activists seem to feel the same way about sponsorship. When I was a young guy around AA, sponsorship to me, I guess I, without even being aware of it, I was looking for a surrogate father who would take care of me and just do things for me. And this went on for several years around AA. And I was looking for a loving, kindly sponsor who would, when I needed money, give me money and understand my problems and not be discouraged by my drinking and on and on. And it sounds kind of funny, but it's really quite pathetic when I look back and think what a misconception I had. It wasn't anybody's fault except my own immaturity. And I, as I've said several times, over the years as a slipper in AA, I got so I wanted to find the magic phrase when I heard someone talk who I was considered to be my sponsor. The magic phrase was always non-judgmental love. For the people who said, I love you just for what you are. You don't have to change. I love you with all your flaws. I thought, that's my new sponsor. Because I needed someone who would love me, I felt, and just go on and on and on doing it. And then I got some of these sponsors here and there, but I never had any close feeling towards them. I just called them when I had problems and wanted something. And I didn't call them much then. And after a while, when they found it impossible to meet all my demands, I felt rejected. And sometimes, so after that, after a while, I just used them. I went through a little phase for a couple of years where I was getting, in cities, I tried to find the most prominent AA in that town to be my sponsor. Because that's always a little clout. You never get near your sponsor, but people say, who's your sponsor? Like if I were in Los Angeles slipping around, I might say, my sponsor is Chuck Chamberlain. Oh. And they treat you with a little more respect. Chuck Chamberlain didn't know he was my sponsor, but I knew. And as I've used a lot of times, you know, to me, sponsorship is, I came to realize that people are not going to give me this unconditional love that they talk about, so therefore they are hypocrites. So I would stay away from them. The only time I'd really call them is when I was really in a jam or really out of, that 2 o'clock call in the morning. Fred, I'm afraid I've let you and AA down. And that was the acid test. Once in a while you could find a sponsor who would respond correctly to that. And that the correct response was, you haven't let us down. You're not bad. Don't feel guilty. You're sick and you've had a relapse. And I'm coming right over. We'll get you through this. I'll get some of the guys and we'll work through it. If you need anything, we'll help you. I thought, now there is a sponsor. And as soon as I got feeling better, I didn't go around them again. I don't know. I suppose if I were a deeply intelligent psychoanalyst, I would say, in retrospect, because I see it all the time, a lot. And that is this. There's a funny phenomenon among people like me, and I presume like many of you. And that is this. I want people to love me when I'm insecure. I want people to love me. I want them to be friendly to me. I want them to like me. And yet somewhere deep inside of me is a little Puritan. And I very much enjoy it when they like me. But when they like me, and I know what an empty shell I am, if they like me, I don't respect them. That's a funny phenomenon. If you like me, I can't respect you. I don't think it's a conscious thought. It's way down deep. But I have seen that phenomenon again and again and again. If I can fool you, I can't respect you. That's a retrospective piece of knowledge. That's nothing I ever learned while I never thought about I was doing it. And one of the things that is most important, it seems to me, for sponsorship, one of the most important things we have to have is respect for our sponsor. And it has to be respect that survives the intermittent dislike of our sponsor and the intermittent resentment of our sponsor. I've always felt if I'm getting along with the people I sponsor, and I'm getting along with them on a continuing basis very well, I'm not doing a good job for them. That means we're both getting goofy. But I finally, when I wound up in Los Angeles and I had slipped and slipped and slipped, I finally wound up with a sponsor who I really resented after a while because he was so autocratic. And he did not want to listen to my explanations. And if I could have found a better, any other sponsor, I would have. But the decent ones didn't seem to want to be my sponsor. And I was living in an old abandoned car in the AA Club parking lot. It wasn't even my abandoned, somebody else's abandoned car. And I didn't have any front teeth. They had just been kicked out of the Phoenix drunk tank. And I lost my clothes, and I lost my occupation, and I lost my family. And I had lost a lot of things. And I asked this guy to be my sponsor because he was a wealthy man. And I thought he would like to sponsor me all the way. And I kept waiting for the score, but it never came. But and I've talked about this nearly every time I talk, his great value to me was that I was... I'll tell you, it's a funny thing. He was very autocratic to me. He would just insist I do things and not debate them. I guess as I've said several times, remember what he told me once. He said, kid, call me anytime you want to, night or day. If it's night, it better be important. But call me anytime. Up until the time you drink. Once you drink, don't bother calling, because all you're going to hear is a click and a dial tone. That's a crappy way to handle a newcomer. I'd become a connoisseur on how to handle newcomers by that time. And that other great example, I think so good. Here I was living in this abandoned car. 3 years before that, I'd been on the faculty of the University of Texas. I was an award-winning writer. I directed an opera. I was a sports writer. I've done all sorts of things. And now I was having a few bad breaks, misunderstandings. And I said to him one day, I threw myself on his mercy. I said, Bob, God, I'm living in a damn abandoned car. I'm cold, hungry. I'm living like an animal. I'm not used to this, Bob. What am I going to do? And he said, get a job. I said, Jesus, look how terrible I look. Get a terrible job. And I followed that direction to a T. I had a terrible series of jobs, and I worked as a janitor in a jewelry store, some AA guy. And he fired me after 3 or 4 days because he felt I was dusting too long amongst the washers. And I really felt bad because I had a little fantasy going. I could just see myself in Seattle saying, "See anything you like?" But I felt terribly hurt when he fired me. And I knew he was going to fire me, so I didn't show up to work. In fact, you heard him describe that on that record you have, Bob. I heard Dick, Bob. But he said, "I was going to fire that little son of a bitch," but he never showed up. I've always been able to tell. I have intuitive feelings about when people look at you funny. You just know. It's about over here. I got a job as a furniture mover. Some guy said, "You're going to help me move furniture for some people." And I got a job as a furniture mover. I call it my, "Bob, I got a job. It is much better. Furniture mover." Said, "Okay." And I last till noon on that job. And some guy, I was working hard. And I felt I was really putting forth an effort doing unskilled labor with a brilliant guy like me. And about noon, the guy said, "Hey, you, without the front teeth, you bumped my lamp." I said, "No, you're mistaken. I broke your costume." Well, I didn't report that to my sponsor, although I got a job when I was about 6 months sober as a dishwasher at the Gaiety Delicatessen. I lasted there a little short time. And after about two or three days, I began to realize, or a couple of days, I guess, that when you have an education and you're sensitive, you can figure out things a lot of guys wouldn't. And I began to realize these busboys are bringing in more dishes than this restaurant is using. Which led me to believe that they were getting them from other restaurants and bringing them in here to humiliate me. So I just took a pile of their dishes and said, "You do those, you little bastards, I'll do ours." And turned out I'd miscounted. And I got fired off that job. That plunged me into a suicidal depression. And I got through a bunch of more jobs. By the time I was a year sober, 11 months sober, I finally got a job wrapping packages in the back of an advertising agency, the same kind of job I'd had when I was 14. This is what you call your AA rocket to stardom. I went to work there. And one of the reasons I went to work from then on, once in a while, when I finally held a job, my sponsor never helped me much. And if I didn't work, I didn't eat. And that catches your attention more than love sometimes. And he'd buy me a hamburger down then, but I'll tell you, it's a funny thing. And then in the next year, I worked at a bunch of little jobs, and I finally, when I was about 2 years sober, I got a job as a beginning writer or a low-grade writer in a medical corporation. And I went to work there every day for the next 3 years. I became director of advertising and public relations at this big medical corporation. And I've mentioned this many times, but you know, that first year, I really hated that. Sometimes I just hated it. I felt so bad. And whenever I bumped into my sponsor, he said, "You go to work today?" And I tried to throw myself on his mercy. I still didn't have any front teeth. That was another one of his fetishes. "I got some money together, Bob. Send it to your kids." Jesus Christ. I love the kids, but, I really need some front teeth, Bob. I'm making my move. "I want to hear that shit. Just having the money." So I was having the money. I finally got so I learned to carry my lip like this. A lot of people didn't know I didn't have front teeth. They thought I'd been burned in a fire somewhere. I tried to throw myself in his brain. I said, "Bob, I got up this morning, I think about all those kids I'll never see again and all the opportunities I've had, and I'm just nothing now. And I just couldn't face my failure, Bob, my spiritual failure." And my spouse said, "I want to hear that shit. Go to work." And I went to work a lot of mornings that first year on that job. Then I tried to meet my sponsor that night. So he'd say, "Go to work today." I really had him.
"Yes, I want to work today."
I really got him good. But it worked. They thought I was sincere. And so I progressed. I'm going to tell you a funny phenomenon about that. I don't think I've ever mentioned this when I talk. Maybe I have. Not for years. I found out later from another guy that my sponsor sponsored that he really didn't like me at all. He thought I was a phony and a goof and a user. And he gave me autocratic demands just to get me out of the way, just to get me out of his situation. And this guy told me something like, it almost sent shivers on my spine. He said he'd sat in my sponsor's kitchen when I called up with one of my plaintive cries. And he held up the phone and says, listen to this sick son of a bitch. Now, you wouldn't think you could gain much from such sponsorship as that. But the funny phenomenon of sponsorship is this. I did what he was saying, and I got better. Whatever his motives in telling me. He, by the time I was about 2.5 years sober, maybe they'd like some over here, too. You've got these people trained well, Dick. We'll go without coffee, but you just keep filling it. Oh, brought 3 cups for 2 people, 3 of us. There's a pregnant lady in the front row. She needs beverages. But it's funny, my sponsor was, in my second year, was getting a little more cross, not just with me, with everybody. After I was sober 2 years, he got mad at the group he founded, the Pacific Palisades group, because they asked him, they didn't do things the way he wanted to do, so he stopped going there. He stopped going to several other meetings. And I used to talk to him and say, Bob, you know, you going to a meeting tonight? And he, no, I'm not. I said, Jesus, man, shouldn't you? He said, look, you take care of you, I'll take care of me. And late my second year, he got drunk. And he died. 15 years sober. Now, isn't that a funny phenomenon? The sponsor got drunk and died, and the baby survived. And he was giving me advice just to get rid of me. And there's a great moral to that story. And that is that you can get well here, I suppose, if you are desperate enough to take the major step of doing something that people who are going to be babies or pigeons must do. I must invest in my sponsor the power to overrule me, which sounds like kind of silly, but that's the power you have to give a sponsor, a strong sponsor, if you're having a difficult time. We've always talked about this, and I'm sure it happens in Bellevue, it happens where I live, it happens in a lot of places where they have strong sponsorship. They talk about dictator-type sponsors. They have one in Bellevue. They have one in Riley. They have one in several places. And it just makes other people in other groups crazy. That guy, he's just some kind of goddamn dictator. He just runs those people crazy. Something ought to be done about him. I don't know if they say that here, too. But I'll tell you something funny about the dictator sponsor. Dictatorship is impossible in Alcoholics Anonymous, except with the complete and enthusiastic approval of the dictatee. I've only got 4 hours worth of tape. Let's hold it down. I'm repeating myself, and I've said this a lot of times, and say this still another time. You know. If you're sick to that dictator sponsor, the next time he gives you one of his autocratic orders, you say, screw you. And that dictatorship is over. I've often felt it would be much better for people like Dick and I and other people like us if we had an AA police force who could come in the night and say, did you say screw you to your sponsor? Do
you still have relatives in Akron, Ohio?
But AA dictatorship is non-operative without the consent of the dictatee. And that is one of the hard things, because each of us who have had sponsors have had days and other, sometimes longer periods, when we just don't choose to accept anymore. And that is one of the difficult things. One of the difficult things about strong sponsorship. Now, there's a pamphlet over there on sponsorship. You got a little thing today, tonight, a printed piece on sponsorship. The one that's in the rack over there is a little more flexible than the one you have printed in front of you. The one you have printed in front of you is kind of strongly talks about a certain type of sponsorship, which I believe in, but it still is only one type of sponsorship. But there are all types of sponsorship. And I suppose it's accurate to say that some people respond to other, to sometimes to sponsorship, and other people respond to others. Some people respond to almost invisible sponsorship. Some people require a strongly structured sponsorship. Some people require a lot of personal presence with their sponsor. Some people do it on the phone. Some people, it seems like, just have a sponsor off somewhere and they don't talk to them. And there are probably a lot of ways to do it. I know there are a lot of ways to do it. And AA takes cognizance of no particular way as the right way. But I have to speak to you this evening from my personal experience as one who required strong sponsorship. And that is the type of sponsorship I know about. And that's what I offer to the people I work with, is strong sponsorship. I do not choose to preside over their disintegration. I do not choose to watch people in whom I am interested slowly come apart and love them till they go down the toilet. Because I think that is, I do them and myself a tremendous disservice. I have, once I got feeling a little better in AA, I wanted to be a sponsor. I don't think I wanted to be a sponsor for the sponsor. What is this? Sit down. Very interesting. Yeah. You don't mind flying thousands of miles and going through heartache and hell to come to a cold climate and watch a bunch of pukes pour coffee? We in AA don't judge. But we are taking names. I have believed that there are people in this room whom I sponsor. There's some folks back there who have come from Council Bluffs tonight because I sponsor their child in Los Angeles, and they want to know if their child is being taken care of. And there are people here whom I've known for many years. I suppose that I would have to believe that in my understanding, sponsorship is one of the great, great helps, but it has some built-in problems. One of the great built-in problems is this. Sometimes we get confused between 12-step calls and sponsors. A 12-step call does not make you a person sponsor. It just means you're making a 12-step call. Sponsorship is when someone hopefully has enough idea of what the hell's going on to ask you to be their sponsor. And I suppose it is okay, after a while, to say, I want to talk to you to see if you want me to be your sponsor. I do that. When people say, I want you to be my sponsor, I say, come on down to my office. We'll talk about it. Because I do not want to get into a debate with someone. Because if they're, you know, I believe certain things in certain things. I'm not going to compromise them for someone who can't find their ass with both hands. I don't want to get into that debate. And maybe they should go somewhere else. But if they are agreeable, I try. I don't think I've ever said no to anyone who would like me to be their sponsor if they were willing to take the action. Now, when I was new, as I started to say some time ago, I wanted to be a sponsor, but not so much to help anybody, but I wanted to look good. There's ego gratification in being someone's sponsor. When I was living in that abandoned car, I had a guy I was sponsoring living in the front seat briefly. Now, that sounds strange. And there are still some old-timers around who say, oh, here's a son of a bitch, how that guy living in that grand car off of him. But I really, I wanted him to get better. And I didn't know much about pills at that time, and he was just zonked on pills all the time, and I thought he had some neurological disorder. And he was an old guy. I said, Bill, how you doing? Oh. Yeah. Now, smell his breath. No, he's not drinking. He's sick. Walk him in, get him some coffee. And some nights, I'd make a sacrifice. I'd go stay elsewhere so he could have the back seat. So she went back to her husband. Just did it for the newcomer. Compromised my virtue. But I was a dingy guy. You take a dingy drunken guy and make him sober, you now have a dingy sober guy. That's what you got. And a lot of people said, you aren't sober long enough to be a company sponsor. And I argument now is, just, how about Dr. Bob? He was only sober a couple of weeks when he was a sponsor. You know, of course, there was a little difference in our integrity, I suppose. But this guy finally died from pills, and I felt that made me look bad. And I worked with a bunch of guys. I worked, as I often said, if they weren't bad drunks by the time I helped them, they were soon thereafter. You know? Remember, I was 10 months sober. I was back living in that car again. I'd been up briefly. And it didn't seem ridiculous to me then, but it seems ridiculous now. That I used to be talking to guys in meetings and say, hey, you want to go to a meeting? Yeah. I'd like to help you. Can you come down to this abandoned car I'm living in and drive down there and pick me up? I'll tell you about AA. You don't seem to. I thought later, maybe I didn't have what they want. And in my second year, I was always trying to help somebody. By that time, I had become a tremendous humanist. I really got so cross with these old timers who were writing off people, saying, "Ah, that son of a bitch I worked with this all along, he's a goof, scrub him." Maybe you don't understand. And I was always in there working with some goof. But then I was about 20 months over, 20 months ago, I worked at the medical corporation. I had a little job in an advertising agency over in Pasadena. And I'd bumped into a guy that I'd been in college with in Wisconsin many years before. And he was a nice guy. He looked a little bit like Gregory Peck, just a nice-looking guy. And he was a slipper and just a mess. Nobody gave up on him. I said, by God, Dick, I'm going to pull you through. We're going to go through this, and we're going to make it. And they said, these old members said, don't call them drunken people. You know, they're drunk. Don't call them. Well, maybe that's the way it seems to you, you old fools, but you got to give them some reassurance. And I called on drunken people night or day, boy, because that was my stuff. And that guy finally, when I was just before my second birthday, this guy, I was working as a little advertising agency. I was tired. I had an old car. I was going to meetings and wheeze back to Pasadena. And I didn't get much sleep, but I had to be to work early in the morning. I was working on being on time and so on. And one night about 2 o'clock, I'd just fallen into bed, dead, tired, and Dick called me. Clancy, I'm drunk and only you can help me. By God, Dick, I will help you. You call the right man this time. I said, can you come over and talk to me? I said, you bet. And I was about dead from fatigue, but I had the zeal of the crusader. And I put on my clothes and I drove over to Hollywood. And I sat and talked to that old son of a bitch. Must have been an hour and a half. Eventually, I told him about the program and what we were trying to do and how Slippers had a chance. About an hour and a half, he finally relaxed and he went to sleep. And boy, I felt, it's going to be all right now. I got back, and I was just groggy from fatigue by this time, but I had some zeal. And I lay down for about an hour, and I got up about an hour later, and I took a shower, and I was goofy, but God, I felt good. And the phone rang. It was Dick. I said, yes, Dick, yes.
I thought you said you were going to come over and see me.
Since that time, I have not called on any drunken slippers. I call on drunken people who are new, but I do not call on drunken slippers. Other people can. But I, to me, drunken slippers, there's something basically inequitable about giving a person more attention when he is failing than when he's succeeding. And I know, I look over my life and I see examples of that. When I wanted attention, sometimes I got drunk because people gave me more attention drunk than I got sober. I have a series of beliefs that I've evolved over the years. I guess they're predicated upon my own experience, such as I think that when I become someone's sponsor, I ask something of them that I guess other people do sometimes. I say, I want you to call me every day. Every day. We'll set a time and you call me. And some people say, you know, you should have to call your sponsor every day. But I believe that because I think it starts to effect a little bit of a bond. If nothing else, it gets you getting used to dialing a number that you may want to call when you may not have time to look it up in the phone book when the pressure hits. I ask that people go to meetings, a lot of meetings. I ask that people get involved in AA. The first thing I always tell a newcomer when I take them to a meeting, the first lesson you learn in AA is to go up after the meeting and thank the speaker. And sometimes you're going to hear speakers you don't like. You literally hate them. And they're sick goofs. Should you have to thank them too? Yes. You thank them. You can think whatever you want to. But you thank them. You say, thank you for teaching me what I don't want to be like, you old son of a bitch. That's one of the easiest lessons to give a new person, to thank the leader of the meeting, the chairman of the meeting, someone who spoke. It's a funny thing. It starts to break down the walls, because you've got to break down these walls from within, not from without. I try to get them acquainted with their peers and get involved and introduce them to people. We have a little thing that really helps in my house that some of you know about. And I don't know that it happens anywhere else in the world, so it's kind of an unfair example. But about 150 AAs come to my house every Saturday. I get a big backyard. And they show up and they play softball and volleyball and have a big barbecue lunch, and they had it today. While I was sitting in the Houston airport, they were having fun, those fools. But you could just shove new people in there, and at first they just... And 1 week they catch their first fly ball, and... Ah, shit! Nobody's... not very many good players, but we have... It gets people together behind their defenses. In other words, they see these old-timers, which are such awesome figures of meeting, but they're just another fat old guy dropping a fly ball on Saturday. It humanizes them. But it gets them involved. I try to ask them to make commitments. I have them do things. Now, for example, there's a guy who is maybe one of the... I don't think he'd mention if I mentioned it, because I think it's a valid thing. But there's a guy named Johnny Harris who's a very excellent speaker and a very good AA, and he's a good man. And his sponsor died last year from a heart attack. And about a month ago, he said, I've been looking all over, and you're the only guy I see ahead of me who's doing more than I am. Would you? He said, we've never been terribly close friends. We've been friends. He said, I'd like to ask you to be my sponsor. And I said, John, I'd be honored to. Now, what I want you to do, call me every day. And he hasn't called, you know, he's 23 years sober. That's ridiculous. But he's called me every day since then. And he has to do it for the rest of his life. But it's, and he, the other day he thanked me for asking him to do it. He says, it's been so many years that I've had a structure that was not my own making, that it really has taken a big load off my back. And I believe in that. And my sponsor, the sponsor I've had for 20 years, is dying now. And I'll tell you, I believe that people should have sponsors. And the reason I selected him 20 years ago, or 19 years ago, was that he was one of the few people ahead of me I saw in AA who was more active than I was. And every year you stay sober, there are less people up ahead more active than you are, I'll tell you. And I'm thinking that when he dies, I really got a problem. There aren't that many people more than 25 years sober who are still out on the front lines doing those things. They're nothing to do with their quality. Their people. Some are too old to do it. Some of them have other things they do. Some of them are active in other works in AA. So I have to find someone who is active and doing the things, because that, no matter how you slice it, it's nice to have a sponsor who is doing what he's telling you to do. There are two classes of sponsors. One are very unsuccessful. You do this. I don't do it, but you do it. And the more successful is, you do this. I'm doing it. You do it with me. And that makes it a little tiring sometimes. But I know a lot of times in my life, I have done things that I would have justified myself to not doing if I hadn't had some puke to do it for. You know, I'd want to look bad to him.
Yes, well, let's go.
I don't suppose I ever act better than I am with a new person. I find myself going out to lunch. We get out of lunch. And I work at a busy downtown corner, but I know that street well. It's Skid Row. I'm kind of a senior member of the establishment down there. And we get out and go across the street. And when I have a newcomer with me, I say, starting to flash the don't walk sign. We better wait. If he wasn't there, I'd be eating already, for Christ's sake. When I have a new guy in the car, I drive well. He's just like, I always used to drive well when my kids were learning to drive, too. See, you slowed down. You don't just roll through corners. You stop. And then you couldn't wait to get him out of the car. But there's a famous old poem, you know, that deals with something else, but it really is true when you're dealing with new people. I love you not for what you are, but for what I am when I am with you. If you're going to put yourself up as an example sponsor, you have to do the things. You don't have to be wonderful. You don't have to be perfect. But you have to do the things. Now, you say, can you stay sober without a sponsor? When my sponsor died, when I was about 2.5 years sober, I didn't get another sponsor. I was doing fine. I was holding a job. I was getting along. I began sponsoring people. I'd been working with people all this time. And of all things, the guy came up on my second birthday. And said, will you be my sponsor? And I said, sure. And later he told me the reason he wanted me to be a sponsor because he didn't have any front teeth either. And he identified them. But he was the first guy I've worked with that stayed sober a year. He's been sober, 23.5 years now. But I didn't have a sponsor. And why would I need a sponsor? I need a sponsor when I was new, but I know the rules now. I'm doing AA well. And my job's got a little bit better. By the time I was 7 years, on my seventh birthday, I was really doing great. I was working in television in Hollywood. I was the main speaker at the Southern California Convention on my birthday. Happens to fall on my birthday. Sunday afternoon, October 31st, 1965. The first speaker of the afternoon was a woman I sponsored. The chairman was a guy I sponsored. The step reader was a guy I sponsored. And I was the main speaker. Oh, Jesus. Hi. And some old crazy lady in Polly Hall, they're not supposed to do this, but she did anyway. She stopped the meeting. They brought down a big cake with 7 candles on it. Thanks, Polly. And I told them about how it should be for them. And I had a new guy with me and my wife, and we were driving back home from Bakersfield to Los Angeles after the meeting. And they were saying, boy, the radio is something, you know. And my wife hinted I might have been just a little smack of arrogance in my talk because I was talking down to a lot of people. I said, no, it's just the facts, kid. But we drove, and about halfway home, it suddenly struck me. If I really got in a bad place, if I lost my job and got in a terrible depression, who would I call? And I spent the rest of that trip going through names in my mind, and there wasn't one person in AA who I didn't have something negative that brought them down beneath my standards. I thought, maybe Bill Wilson. Not Bill Wilson, because now he's in a pushing niacin. I don't want him anymore. Dr. Bob is dead. They're all. I thought, I wouldn't have anybody to call, really. I could call some of these little people, but I wouldn't listen to what they said. And it suddenly struck me, I may never be closer to being drunk than I am right now. And I decided that night, I'm going to get a sponsor. That's when I went through this selection process. Who ahead of me is more active than I am? Who ahead of me is doing the things, whatever I think of them personally? And I thought of one guy ahead of me who was active. I hated him because he was such a smarmy, nice man, and people, everybody loved him. You know, just, you hate those kind of people. When I was new, living in this car, he'd come to the club where I was living, and he'd speak on Easter. And people say, "Oh, it's him." I thought, "Oh, shit on him." When he got up to speak, I left. I don't know if the meeting continued or not. They may have stopped and told me to go. But that old man, a man named Chuck Chamberlain, I thought, he's the only man I know that's close by. And I don't like him because he's a smarmy, do-goody, spiritual old puke. And by God, he has got what I want. So I went down, I called him up the next morning. I said, "I'd come down and talk to you." He said, "Okay." So I went down to his office. I said, "Chuck, I heard you talk." I heard him talk. I said, "I've been thinking a lot about this, and I would like to ask you to be my sponsor." And he said, "Well, I heard you talk yesterday at Bakersfield." He said, I presume you came down to offer to be my sponsor." And I realized I'd made a hideous mistake. But I thought about giving another chance. And he's been my sponsor ever since then. There has never been a week since 1965 that I haven't talked to him on the telephone. And I've seen him. And now it's kind of sad because I go down and visit him in the hospital. He's laying there. He doesn't even look like the same man. He's drawn. He's dying of emphysema. Just as insane as he has to have oxygen all the time. And I see him. It makes me sad. This strong, vital, wonderful man. Why does this happen to people like that? But it doesn't happen. Everybody gets old. Everybody gets old. Everybody dies. As I've said, all winter long now, my father has been dying. My mother's been dying. And my sponsor's been dying. And I just, sometimes when I get to off the track, I think, Jesus Christ, everything I'm counting on is going down around me. But that's ridiculous, of course, because as has been said by me before and by many other people, that's the nature of life, that we have these pillars and they hold up the roof for us. And then one day those pillars go down and we become the pillars and we hold up the roof. Then we go down and some guy behind us who used to be nothing is holding up the roof for the people behind him. And that's very much the same condition with sponsorship. I noticed I was glancing through your manual. And let me explain one thing before I'm still thinking about it, because I don't leave the wrong impression. People I sponsor don't have to call me every day for the rest of the month. That's just a temporary thing. But I ask that they call me once a week, because that's what I do. I call my sponsor once a week, and I have people who I sponsor who are now living all over the world. And by God, they call me every week. It isn't that they're doing it for me. I know that that helps me, and it's got to help other people if they are interested in what I believe in. I also believe that people should not say no to AA requests. And I think everyone would agree with that. The question is the definition of what is an AA request. Something I want to do is an AA request. But an AA request is something that deals exactly with AA. It doesn't mean that somebody says, "Hey, I'm an AA, would you come over and help me clean my garage?" That is not an AA request. That's what sponsors say, but it's not an AA request. The AA requests are formal requests to participate, to do things, to be involved in things. And if I can physically do it, I've said yes. My sponsor suggested to me in 1959, I said, "How long do I have to keep doing this thing?" He says, "Till it stops working." And that's the best test I know. You do it till it stops working. And it still works for me. There have been a lot of periods in the last 25 years that I thought the time is here when it's no longer working. But I survived a few more days and I realized that it hadn't stopped working. My perceptions were off, as human beings do. One of the things that I think I have to remember, and you have to remember, is that if you have a sponsor or if you sponsor someone, there are times you're not going to like each other. It's sad. We're supposed to love everybody in AA. And I try. But I'll tell you this, I'm sure you'd agree with this. There are people in AA that I would not drink with. They really are. Now, there are some people I sponsor who I literally don't like. I just don't like them. And I'm always looking for, hopefully they'll commit some cardinal sin so I can banish them and feel good about it. And the reason I keep doing this is because I think of that old goofy sponsor of mine who saved my life not liking me. But hopefully, there's a kind of a three-way deal that you go through with sponsors if you have a strong sponsor. And it's almost like the evolution of a human being. At first, if you find a sponsor who you respect and love and admire, it's just like a little child with their father. You hold their hand, nothing can hurt me now. That's my sponsor. And in sometimes a year, sometimes 2 years, sometimes 3 years, 4 years, you grow up much faster than humans do. And all of a sudden, you're a teenager. And you're thinking, this old son of a bitch is holding me back. Yes. And you think, I'm running away from this house. This is crazy. And then if you can survive that phase, hopefully you get to be like a grown-up child with a grown-up parent. You again appreciate him and love him, but in a different way. Not as an idol, not as a god, but as someone who has been instrumental in your life. And I think that's the thing we would all like to have. That's what we would like to get from the people we sponsor. That's what we would like to be able to give to our sponsors. I started to say, I noticed in your thing today that there was some question about changing sponsors. That's always kind of a problem in AA, changing sponsors. And most people believe it in the abstract until it happens with one of their own pigeons. But I'll tell you, I think it's a funny fine line there. I'm sure most of you would agree with that. Changing a sponsor, I have a sponsor I can't communicate with. I don't respect him really. I think I just don't feel any. There's got to be a certain chemistry. I don't feel any chemistry. There's no reason not to change a sponsor. But that very same thing can happen from an absolutely different reason, which looks almost the same. I want to find someone who will let me do what I want to do. I don't want someone who's going to be so goddamn interested in everything I do. I want to find someone who will just say, do it your way, son. And then I find a new sponsor, and I stick with that. And we watch people do this a lot. You stick with that sponsor until he hears something he doesn't agree with, and he moves on to the next sponsor. Sponsor jumpers have a tendency to finally make their last jump into a bar. I think you have to be very careful when you find yourself changing sponsors. That's something you really must study, because a great source of sponsor jumping is from that phase when you're in your teenage adolescent rebellion approach to your sponsor. And I've had that towards my sponsor. I haven't had it for years, but I've had it. He has done something that I didn't like. When he took a position that was different than I had. I thought, well, screw him. I'm not going to, I'd punish him. I'd call him, but I wouldn't talk much. Now, when you're 15 years sober and you're punishing your sponsor, it indicates that you've got a lot on your mind. I look but thank God I survived. I was ready to dump him a few times, but I had no place, nobody that I respected more. And that gets back to that thing about respect. There are going to be times when you're going to just can't stand your sponsor. But you've got to respect him enough to allow yourself to not jump one more day. And eventually come to the reluctant conclusion that maybe I am seeing it wrong. But it's a hard thing, because when you're mad at your sponsor, you don't want to talk to him. And the way you overcome it is by talking to him. So you get caught in a little cul-de-sac. But, sponsorship sometimes, as we were joking about earlier, this strict sponsorship, this tough sponsorship. You think, Jesus, that's some new phenomenon. I'm going to tell you, that's the way as far as I've been able to perceive and talk to people who were there, that's the way sponsorship was in the early days of AA. They were really on top of each other. Bill Wilson moved into Dr. Bob's house and just... He didn't have any program to give him. Just watch him, you know. And they got that poor boob out of the hospital, and they both watched him. You know? And those early days of AA, they were tough. They were tough. You know, I heard of a little guy who was an Army sergeant who got sober under Dr. Bob in 1938. He's been dead for many years now, but he used to come to the hospitals and talk to these guys that Dr. Bob was working with. He had such a great phrase. I just love it. He's got these guys there. I'm going to help you. I'm going to be your sponsor. Now, the first thing, you're going to find God. No matter what you call that son of a bitch, you're going to find God. Who would do that? There's something in that book that I would never say. It is too severe for me to say. I couldn't bring myself to say, I don't think. Because I watched too many people die. But the book says, if you are not convinced you're an alcoholic, go out and drink some more. I would never do that. I've watched so many people go out and drink some more. I never got back. And who have died out there? But that's a rather strict. In fact, your original version of the chapter 5, there's a popular floating around, I'm sure, Bellevue, where they were really tough. At the end of the 12 steps, went on to say, what an order. Many of us can't go through them. Many of us explained, what an order, I can't go through them. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The principles we have said are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Then it goes down to the ABC. A, probably no human power could have really been alcoholic. C, that God couldn't, would have sought. And this paragraph after that was deleted in the second edition, in the first edition, but it's on the manuscript. And it says, after reading this far, if you do not know what we are, if you do not want what we have, we suggest you reread it. And if it still doesn't make sense, we suggest you throw this book away. It's not the exact terminology, but it's almost exactly what they say. And all the way through the book, it was just tough. And those old guys, you got to do this! You got to do that! And these people got a structure. And it's very similar, I think, psychologically. Many times, one of two things happen. Products of strong sponsorship go one of two ways, just like children of severe parents do. Children of strong parents go one of two ways. They either become strong parents, or they try to make up to their kids for the softness and everything they never got, and they become ultra-soft parents. And they say, I've given you everything, Jimmy. Why did you shoot Mother? Why didn't you tell me that's what you wanted the machine gun for, Jimmy? And that people do that in AA. I watch people who become products of strong sponsors who are going to find more love for the people they sponsor. And they insist on nothing from them and give them no structure. And sometimes it works, but rarely. Because most of us, whether we like to admit it or not, if we knew what to do, we would have done it. And we know things that certainly have to be done, but we don't know when and how and the best way to go about it. Dr. Bob's last talk, when he was dying from cancer, he said it a little differently. But he said, we never want to get so busy that we won't have time to stop and give a pat on the back to the man behind us, to encourage him, to, because none of us would be here if somebody hadn't done it for us. And that was true. Bill wouldn't have been there if Abby Thatcher hadn't done it for him, and Bob wouldn't have been there if Bill hadn't done it for him, and on and on. And it's just amazing. It's literally amazing how over the years, now I'm going to tell you something, and this is really true. AA is worldwide. There are AAs everywhere. But I'm going to tell you something. There are pockets of enthusiasm surrounded by long gray areas of apathy and another pocket of enthusiasm. One of the reasons I like to come to Bellevue, because this is a real pocket of enthusiasm. And there's a good pocket of enthusiasm with my friends in Midland, Texas. And there are all sorts of pockets of enthusiasm. I'd like to think we have one where I live. But in between, there are gray people sitting around doing gray things, wondering why AA is not satisfactory. You will discover that anywhere where there is a pocket of strong enthusiasm for AA, there is a strong sponsorship practiced because it gives you a certain security. You have a place to go, and there are limits, and you know what to do and what you can do, and you don't have to worry about how you look, because you don't have to look good to all those pukes. You have to look good to the guy you respect. And if he says that's all right, that's all right. And if you don't like it, screw you. There's a great security in that knowledge. There's a great security. I know there are new people here tonight who think the function of AA is to give them a new book.
In the old days, we had to steal ours. And we did, too, I'll tell you that.
But they say, get a sponsor. I don't think you have to have a sponsor immediately. I think you ought to find someone. That you gotta look around and see who'd. The tendency is to just like when you vote, you know you should vote for principles, but you really vote for who you like. And then you find reasons for it later.
How'd you vote for that image?
Oh, I like to stand on Greek aid. When you're new, you've got to find someone who's ahead of you, who will inspire you, who will make you feel more secure when you are with him or her than you are with other people. And then when you've been around a little while, you have to look around and say, sometimes you should change sponsors, first couple months maybe, to someone whom you respect. Someone doesn't have to be the oldest timer, doesn't have to be the dick, or doesn't have to be any of these old timers. Someone, to me, in my opinion, the most effective sponsors I know are guys about 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 years sober, because they are really bushy-tailed and they're ready to go. Some of them are. Some of them aren't. Some of them are already old. You know. Well, the book says return to normal living. It isn't normal living listening to your bullshit. You better find people who tell you with their eyes about AA. There's all sorts of people who tell you with their mouth. See, watch their being. See if they tell you. See if they're vibrant. See if they're alive. See if they exude. The thing I always loved about my sponsor, when that son of a bitch walked in the room, by God, it lit up. It's boom. That's all I could do to be mad at him after that.
I won't look.
But find someone who's alive, that you're proud of, and who you respect. And if you're the sponsor, what you better do is make it your business to be worth his or her trust. You better be worth his or her trust. That doesn't mean you have to become wonderful. You're never going to become wonderful. And they're going to find out soon enough when they see you someday in one of your little goddamn tantrums or one of your snotty selfishness. You're not wonderful, Lamar. Oh, yeah, I am too. But by that time, there might be some spiritual umbilical cord. Oh, sorry. Some spiritual umbilical cord that will tie you to him even though you're swimming away. And the best thing you can do is to, I think, when you find a way that works for you, you transmit that to the people behind you. It's amazing the thing. Some of those people who got a book tonight, 20 years from now, are going to be the old heads of the Bellevue group, and they're going to have their cadre of psychophants. Can I give books? Can I give books? Don't make me pick up chairs again. And some of those people that got books tonight are going to be dead. And some of those people that got books tonight are going to be drunk and have gone away and thought, well, AA doesn't work for people like me. And it all depends on whether or not you can make some sort of a connection. You could be like, it's almost like those guys in the space capsule. You got to keep grabbing until you get a hold of that thing and hang on. You got to grab it and hang on. Because I think sponsorship is the greatest gift I received. It's the greatest honor I can have. I sometimes forget it. I am not a wonderful person, I'm sorry to say. Sometimes when that phone keeps ringing, I just wish they'd all go die. God damn it.
I've got a headache today, and I've got to take my treadmill test this afternoon. I'm sick and tired of this guy. Hello. And I got to remember to give them advice that is good and sound and solid and based on my experience and my knowledge of the world rather than some abstraction that sounds pretty that'll keep them at bay for another couple days. And that's what it's about. That's why we gather together. But these pockets of enthusiasm, you will find are always areas of strong sponsorship. There always are strong sponsors there. There's a pocket of enthusiasm of all places in Moorhead, Minnesota, for Christ's sake. You'd think they would not, they'd think they'd just mill around in the snow up there. But there's some guys up there who've turned AA around up there. I spoke in Minneapolis at some big thing last summer, and these sponsors brought in their group. There were five rows, or about 50 people from this Moorhead group. They're just like the Bellevue group, the Pacific group. Hi! Hi! Ha! 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 Oh, shit! You know. Now I'm... But it's got to be more than coincidence. I think that's where the engender enthusiasm. And I may have mentioned this before, but it's something I was talking to somebody about on the plane yesterday. I was coming from Los Angeles. Interesting root of the word enthusiasm. It's from look it up in the dictionary sometimes. It's a funny root. En, meaning within, from the Greek. Theos, God. The God within. That's the meaning of the word enthusiasm. And I don't know any greater testament of the power of the God within us in Alcoholics Anonymous than to be enthusiastic in our practice and teaching of it. That's why I don't hesitate at all when people are somewhere, because it happened to me this way, you're between 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months in there. Might have just been the coincidence, that's when I got fired as a dishwasher, but that's when I had a suicidal depression. And that's when my sponsor took advantage of my illness and made me write an inventory that I swore I would never write. Little do those pukes know now. When I wait for their 6 month depression, I mean, some 6 months, it's all going to hell. Oh, got a deal for you, pal. And they write, and I ride along the same highway with my people, listening to their hideous inventories that I rode reading my hideous inventory along the ocean, because I just found out that if you travel in a moving car at night and let them read by flashlight, they think you can't hear it. That's a funny thing. I remember when I got up near Oxnard, 40 miles out of Los Angeles, I looked at my sponsor to see if he's going to throw me out of the car, and he was going, and I thought, I've made this old son of a bitch nap. You know, I'm a much better sponsor than he is. When I get up near Oxnard, I always turn my head. You hear? There's nothing new in it. I haven't heard anything new in an inventory in 15 years. I wish some new specific, but no different feeling ever. And it's just, and you got to help people understand that there's nothing, they're really not so different. Because the greatest curse we will ever have, the greatest enemy between the greatest enemy between God and me, or between man and me, is the innate feeling within me that my case is different, that there are different things about me that others don't understand. It's a lifelong battle to overcome that. You never do overcome it. We will die still with intermittent feelings of, yes, but my case was different. But you can cut it down. That's what I was telling these doctors and psychiatrists last night. They were alcoholics. They were meeting for the International Doctors of AA. And I just gave them hell. Because I pointed out, I didn't give them hell. I explained to them the negativism of such a group. Because when you get in a special interest group, whether it's pilots, movie stars, doctors, lawyers, that's okay if that's one of the things you're doing. But if you think that's going to keep you sober, you're wrong. Because what it does is reinforce your difference.
our case is different because we're actors. That's one of the great reasons that actors have a hell of a time staying sober, because people will not treat them like alcoholics. And I understand that. There's something kind of unusual about going to a meeting and seeing a big star or something, and you want to rush over and elbow three non-entity newcomers out of the way. I don't want the gracious of it. And you got to literally force yourself not to do it. I know that I made a special, I may have told you this story. I made a special point a few years ago. Betty Ford was in a treatment center. And the doctor, Dr. Kirsch, Joe Kirsch, who's a friend of mine, called me up and says, where are you speaking? I said, Fountain Valley tonight. And he says, I'm going to send over President Ford. He said, I want you to explain alcoholism tonight, because he's really having a difficult time. He's not an alcoholic, but he wants to know what Betty's going through. Shit. Might as well give him the best. So I got down to Fountain Valley, and sure enough, there was President Ford and Betty Ford, and I just want to go over there. Sorry, President Ford. I cooled him off. Oh, hello. But I thought, I'm going to act at this meeting just exactly like I would any other meeting. And you know, it was a big meeting, anniversary meeting. There's a few empty seats in the front rows are often our meetings, and people lurking in the back. So I got off on the right foot. I said, hey, you guys in the back, there's some seats out here.
Oh, you want to sit down?
He said, come on. Sit down, for Christ's sake. Maybe you'll learn something. All right, I said, screw you. Stand up back there. I went on my talk. Afterwards, the secretary comes in.
Oh, those were President Ford's Secret Service men.
Now, you would have thought I should have felt bad, but I didn't. I did what was right. It's not my fault they're Secret Service men. My job is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. But you can do whatever you want to. You know, I think when you deal with new people, but you have to be, the primary thing is the sponsoree, the pigeon, the baby as we call them, you have to make a commitment. You have to commit. You must surrender the most difficult thing you will ever have to surrender, your judgment in times of crisis. Because that's when you don't want to surrender your judgment. You don't want to. I really don't have time for theory now. This is the real world. Screw you, Chick. There's an old, I'll remind you, a famous story. It's a true story. In the early days of the airplane, these old funny airplanes, the Wright brothers, and the first Army, the one thing that happened to these airplanes they could never solve. They'd get up to a certain height, they'd get into a tailspin, where they'd tailspin, and the nose would be down, they're trying to pull them out, and they'd try to pull them out. They could not pull these planes out of a tailspin. And they're killing them. And they were just dreadful. There was no way out. They could not find a way to beat it. And one day, over in Virginia, at Langley Field, some early Army pilot got at some hideous height, like 1,500 feet, and he stalled and got a nail tailspin, and he tried to pull that son of a bitch back. And he couldn't pull it back, and he realized you're going to die, so he said, I might as well get it over quick. So he pushed the stick forward to make it go into the ground even faster, and that day they learned how to come out of tailspin. And that is still the way you come out of tailspins. You get a certain amount of rudder and you get this and that, but it's power, you pull out the other side. But I'll tell you something funny. After that, they knew how to pull out of a tailspin. And there were still pilots being killed in tailspins. They get into a tailspin and they knew to push that stick forward. But this is no time for theory, Jack. They had to wait for an almost new generation of pilots. And that's the way it is in our lives. We can all, everybody's tolerant and good and things going well. Yes, I surrender. I'm giving it all day. I love all mankind, you know. I just. But one day, they all look funny. Everywhere. Yeah. And you realize, I really don't have time to screw around with AA now. I got to take care of myself. That's the toughest single time you will ever have. What do you think I should do? And just know the answer is going to be wrong before he even says it.
that doesn't seem right, you old son of a bitch.
Oh. Yeah.
But that's where they're separated. That's where they're separated. That's where you got to do it. Because that is where the crisis is for people like you and me. Left to our own devices, eventually life will get painful enough, so I must use the alleviating force of alcohol. And it is my job not to deal with alcohol. My job is to deal with the forces that make me, give me the emotions that destroy me. Protracted and intense frustrations and anxieties and sometimes terrible waves of insecurities and loneliness and uncertainty and resentments and emptinesses and all the things and alienations and fear and resentment and defiance. And those kill a lot of people. That's why over 98% of people like you and me die from this disease. I'll tell you, tonight they said, I'm very glad to see Marguerite from St. Joe back there with 34 years. Otherwise, I wouldn't have an old-timer to shake my fist at.
You old-timers are ruining AA, Marguerite.
But I'm every woman like Marguerite, as I get older, every old-timer ahead of me, I cherish. I really cherish. Because they continue to hold a beacon for me. But I know that nobody, you, me, or anybody, is ever going to find a way to live in comfort on a continuing basis. Because human beings do not do that. No matter how hard you work the program, you never rise above human being. And human beings are not wonderful all the time. There are a few that are. I've used this example before. When I was new, I went to the Beverly Hills meeting. I heard a guy say, I no longer have anger or rage or resentment. I thought, oh, shit. I went up afterwards, I pretended to stumble, and I laid a hot cup of coffee down the front of his suit. And he recovered rage and anger. I look back at my life. It sounds a little bad now. But my sponsor was my higher power when I came here because I was so theologically screwed up I couldn't accept God. And as a result of pleasing my sponsor, doing things to please my sponsor, I got enough security to believe in AA. As a result of pleasing my sponsor and believing in AA, I came to believe in God. And I think that's one of the things we got to remember too. You don't have to come here as a theological wizard and suddenly spring full-blown into a belief that somebody else took years to get. You got to be careful. You don't teach the people you're sponsoring. Insist that they find in the second week what you found in the fifth year. You got to just stay with them. You got to start from where they are. And you, wherever you are out there, you got to start from where you are and you got to keep going forward. And your sponsor's there to guide you forward and encourage you to be forward and sometimes be cross with you when you act like a child and refuse to go forward. But that's love. It's the same way with my children. When my children, how could you love, how could you call that love when you got a kid just spanking the hell out of them? But I'll tell you, it isn't love to say to my kid, oh, you were playing in the street in the traffic? Well, I guess you got to do what you got to do.
I told you not to play in the street!
You don't love me.
No, you're right.
I believe in being a strong parent. I believe in being a strong sponsor. I believe that I want a sponsor ahead of me. So I will always maintain what I have found here. A structure of security most of the time that will enable me to maintain growth that brings about enthusiasm and continuing re-emergence of my appreciation for the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I'm glad to be here tonight. If I didn't say a word, I'd have been glad to be here tonight, because I'm surrounded by the continuing reinforcement of the strength of Alcoholics Anonymous and the miracle it has made in my life. I am very glad to be here. I'm glad this pocket of enthusiasm is here. I hope it stays here. But if this doesn't stay here, I'll find somewhere else where there's a pocket of enthusiasm. Because I want to be with the people who are feeling good. I want to be with the people who say they are feeling good and are looking bad. I want to be with the people. I don't want to be with the people who, when they're sober, after they're sober 10 years, never go to a meeting. And say, do good.
Hey, it's like it used to be.
And then a bullet drops from between their teeth. I want to be with the young people. They may be 75 years old, but God damn it, they're young people, and they're vibrant, and I hope you do too, and let's all stay here. Thank you. Thank you.